On the telephone line, well, he's the biggest thing to come out of Morris High School this side of Joe Harrington. From the Boston Globe, Chad Finn joins us. Hello there, Chad.
Nobody ever beats Joe Harrington. Legend for all time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But you're number two, right?
No. Top 100 maybe from, like, my grades, top 100 in my senior class. No higher than that, though.
Oh, dear. I'm sorry to hear that. I could have sworn you were valedictorian.
No, that must have been somebody else.
No, as I pointed out, I don't think I could have spelled valedictorian back then. But that's okay because, you know, we've both been able to get past that challenge we had in our academic careers. I was holding out for a record at the University of Maine. 13 years went by. They didn't name a building after me. And I said, well, I might as well graduate.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. University of Maine, I breezed through in 5.5 years.
Oh, my God.
I was on the fast track.
Now, what year did you graduate? I wonder if we overlapped at all.
93.
All right. Well, yeah, I officially graduated in 89.
Probably ran into you walking through the freezing tunnels of Neville Hall or something.
Oh, I spent a lot of time in Neville Hall.
Actually,
absolutely.
All I did as a freshman was play basketball for Memorial Gym. So the sub 1.0 GPA in my first semester was because I was playing too much pickup hoops. So if you were there, maybe we crossed that.
I might have been there. We also used to play, in earlier days, we used to play some wicked Saturday games. We'd play all day over at Lengill Gym.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Did that a little bit, too.
Nice.
93 is when I got my degree as well, December of 93. I took my last classes were in the spring term, but I finally turned in my final paper and got my degree in December.
Well, if you were at the basketball court, paths or jetties, we crossed paths for sure.
So you weren't there for the glory days of Ushuaia then?
Vaguely familiar. Like a lot of things from college.
Well, yes, yeah. All references to that time period are clouded with some sort of haze. I don't quite understand. Well, let's talk about some other things. A couple of sports media items to talk about. Loved your interview, and got to say, I'm pretty jealous that you got to talk with MSNBC's Steve Kornacki.
Yes, and the main tie there that I had no idea about.
Yeah.
I'm curious if he has to pay back his winnings now that Medina Spirit is in a little bit of a trainer-induced trouble, it seems like, but apparently gets to keep his $1,200 he won, putting $100 down at 12-1, I think he said he did. So, yeah, Kornacki obviously was a kind of phenomenon, like John King at CNN during the build-up to the election with their knowledge of the electoral votes and where they came from and how each county leaned and just incredible knowledge of the electoral map. And NBC has obviously been using him for sports reasons. They kind of capitalized on his popularity and used him during the NFL playoffs. And he's a lifelong Boston sports fan, grew up in Groton, went to BU. And don't hold that against him because he'll lose any guys. But He was really intrigued by doing the NFL playoff projections, and he's a lifelong horse racing fan. His uncle, who owns a store in Old Orchard Beach, the one right under the pirate ship, he described it to me, used to take him up to Scarborough Downs as a kid, which really got him into horse racing. So really interesting guy, really nice guy, and someone you're happy to see them have the success that they've had. He seems like a pretty egoless dude for all the notoriety he's gotten.
Well, that was great. If you haven't seen that piece, check it out. And also enjoyed your piece talking to Kendrick Perkins.
Yeah, a little bit of news that he re-upped with ESPN, which really isn't a surprise, other than that I had no idea his contract was up until I got a note that he's going to be resigning. But, yeah, he's carved out a really nice niche for himself. He's got one of those deals with ESPN that usually go to a play-by-play guy, which is you're signed with us, but you're free to do stuff with regional networks. Mike Green does Knicks games. Matt Vasgersian does, I think it's Padres, maybe on the radio, because they're slow, does the TV. He does some major league team. Kabuki Zombie does the Cubs, calls Cubs games regionally, and they're all ESPN guys. And they let Perk do the NBC Sports Boston stuff because he likes it so much and is so tied in with the Celtics that he's got a new contract with ESPN where he's going to be appearing on all the shows that he's on now, which is all over there. Daytime programming and evening program. He's on pretty much everything they have at one time or another. And then he'll continue to do the NBC Sports Boston, the honest assessments of the Celtics that he provides us. So it's good. Perk's about the most candid guy there is in terms of NBA analysts, and says what's on his mind, doesn't fear criticizing guys who are even teammates, and carved out a nice little career out of it.
Yeah, I'm glad to see that. He's great. We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. Well, speaking of basketball, speaking of the Celtics, is it time? Is it time to give up on this bunch? Have they become, as your colleague Dan Shaughnessy says, one of the truly unlikable teams in Boston sports lore?
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far because there's been some pretty loathsome Red Sox teams in particular, but certainly one of the more frustrating teams I can ever remember, because it shouldn't be this way. They have plenty of talent. It's essentially the team that got to the East Finals in the bubble last year. You know, they had Gordon Hayward, but he got hurt in the first game of the playoffs and wasn't himself when he came back, kind of a non-factor for the most part. And the really frustrating thing is that it appears to be effort. And it's hard to figure out how to divide up the blame, because you can say, well, Brad Stevens should bench so-and-so if they're not playing hard. Okay, you bench Jason Tatum, what now? And what if it's on a night where Jaylen Brown's not in the lineup, where Kemba Walker's not in the lineup? They've had no continuity. Rich, this is really a case where the media being off-site and doing everything from Zoom kind of hurts how the team is covered, because it's really been hard to get a grasp on what's going on. I've had one beat writer tell me, somebody I trust really quite a bit, that the only person who really takes it hard after they lose is Marcus Smart. Some of the younger guys do. Pritchard does. Aaron Nesmith is somebody who leaves it all out in the court. Now he's getting more playing time, but it kind of rolls off Tatum and Brown, and it's hard to gauge whether it's just because they're kind of low-key guys or because maybe they're just not as inspired to win as you would hope them to be for, you know, regular season game and, you know, so-and-so night and at this point in the season. So a lot of things we're still trying to figure out without the access about what the, you know, why this team has not been able to perform up to expectations and what's going on in that locker room that's led to them playing the way that they have on too many nights this season.
Now, even with all that said, I can't imagine that Brad Stevens' job is seriously in jeopardy.
I don't think so either. I mean, he just signed a contract extension for one thing, and Danny's adamantly behind him, and Wick is adamantly behind Danny, frankly, as he should be. Anybody who wants to blame Danny for this isn't paying attention with the things, with the unexpected things they've had to deal with the last couple of years. Kyrie leaving, Horford leaving, Hayward leaving, having to reset over and over again and still putting together really competitive teams. So he's done as good a job in a situation as you can. The people say, well, he struggles in the draft. You got Nesmith right and you got Pritchard right this year. You got Time Lord right a couple of years ago. Mm. And I like Romeo Langford, too, even though he's played pretty poorly since he came back. So that's Ainge should be okay. But the Stevens thing, you have to ask if they're not listening to him, and if they would listen to somebody that might have played in the NBA or might have had a little bit of different background. I know some coaches have run into that issue where players sort of tune them out because they don't feel like they had the same career experiences that they did. I don't know if that's happening to Brad, but with trying to figure out what's going on here, and that sounds to me like it's a plausible answer, at least part of a plausible answer, but I can't see them firing him. I don't think he should be fired, and I'd put like a 1-2% chance on Ainge saying, hey, maybe Juwan Howard or somebody like that would be an interesting choice, but I would be pretty close to shocked if they made a coaching change.
Well, and you know, there's there's a lot that Boston fans of any team will put up with, but the one thing they can't stand, J.D. Drew comes to mind, is the appearance of apathy.
Yeah, that's a good point. And they also fall for false hustles sometimes, which is why they think Trot Nixon was a better player than J.D. Drew. I'll fight that one to the end. But the catch-22 of that is Marcus Smart, because he plays really hard, but he tends to make more what-are-you-doing mistakes, whether it's a shot or getting kicked off of the refs at the wrong time and that sort of thing than anybody else on the roster. So the guy that cares the most is also the guy that's, he's hurting you in any key situation sometimes. I like Marcus as much as I've liked any Celtics player in a long time, but even I'm starting to wonder if maybe it's time to move on, whether the injuries have taken a toll, whether they need somebody who's a little bit more reliable in terms of not having complete overconfidence in their own abilities to the point of being detrimental. So I don't know. There'll be changes. It can't be Jalen. It can't be Jason. Those guys have had their hiccups, but they're still tremendous players who have continued to improve. And I think they do care. I just think they're kind of laconic guys, and that's gotten in the way of what they need this year.
All right, the flip side of the Celtics and their disappointing performance, the surprising Red Sox with the best record in all of Major League Baseball. Who's most responsible for this success? Is it the return of Alex Cora, or is it the team that Chaim Bloom has put together?
Yeah, we're always dividing up the blame pie. There's a credit pie here where it's distributed pretty equally. Cora's clearly, I wrote about this today, I don't know if it's up, but he's clearly the right man at the right time, right city, right ball club. He's the guy who should be managing this team. His confidence is such that I think a lot of managers, including Renicki last year, would have been hard pressed to find something to be positive about after you start 0-3 with three losses with the Orioles coming off last year's misery. And yet, Cora's confidence never wavered. And his team sees that. They've kind of taken on his personality. The guys like Verdugo and Devers has become a more outgoing player. He's kind of developed some of Adrian Beltre's charmingly goofy habits in the batter's box. The team has much more personality, I think, with Cora than it does with Reinicke. And Bloom did a great job securing talent for nothing, whether it's Salamura, whether it's the Phillies trade last year that brought Pivetta here, a bunch of things like that, really built up the quality depth of the organization. And also, we kind of forgot there's some really good players. Xander Bogaerts is just he's going to be an all-time Red Sox.
Yes.
We don't really think of him that way, but he's having a phenomenal year. So it's a lot of different things that have added up to this team being a surprise.
Well, and you mentioned Alex Verdugo, and he was put in an impossible situation. He's not and never will be Mookie Betts, but I like the way he plays the game. He's having fun, and he's really growing as a player. You see it. And noticed it over the weekend, and they were talking about it on the TV broadcast, his ability to go the opposite way when they go into a shift against him.
Yeah, he's got a great Fenway swing. And the thing about Verdugo is I don't think he even knows he's traded for Mookie Betts. he's one of those guys who just loves to hit, loves baseball, has 100% confidence in his own abilities, and things like the pressure of replacing a franchise great player in his own time just kind of rolls off him. And he had injury issues, the concerns about his back when he came over the Dodgers, and that's hindered him a little bit at times. But when he's fully healthy, he's a terrific player, and it's another case of confidence. Renicki had it in him last year, but Cora has it even more, where they look at him. The Dodgers didn't look at him like an everyday player. They didn't think he could hit lefties. So Renicki gave him a chance last year, and I think he hit .320 against lefties last year. When he came to camp this year, there was absolutely no doubt that he's going to be a regular in the lineup, and Cora made that clear to him. And that's the way as a manager to build a bond with a player you don't really know right away, to show faith in him right off the bat. And it's benefited everybody.
Couple of games left in the regular season for the Bruins. We're hoping up here they make the correct move and make Jeremy Swayman, the former Black Bear, the backup goalie for the postseason.
Yeah, that's going to happen for sure. My buddy Pluto Schinzau, he used to work with us at the Globe and in New Hampshire, and he's now at the Athletic. He had a piece today or yesterday. I read it this morning. Could be a week old for as far as I know. But essentially, quoting Cassidy, saying Swayman will be the backup in the playoffs. So it was under the primary point was that Rask isn't going to give up games to anybody, that Rask is the clear-cut number one goalie, and that he won't be splitting time with Swayman, even though Swayman has a 147 goals against average and clearly is the goalie of the future. But within that point, he made it very obvious and apparent that Swayman and not Halak will be the guy, and that's as it should be. It's a tough break for Halak. He's been a good teammate, good goalie here, but he's limited, and the fact is the kid's outplayed him and deserves a chance.
Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, Boston.com. Chad, thanks as always. Good catching up with you. Have a good rest of your day and week, and we'll check in again very soon.
All right. I'll see you at the pastor at the governor's, the Memorial Union, or something like that.
If I'm on campus, there's a pretty good chance I'll be there, just like my 13 years as an undergrad.
That's the way to do it. You beat the system, man.
Exactly. Thanks, Chad.
Cheers.
Chad Finn with us on Downtown.